This episode of Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
And by Ting.com. Head over to last.ting.com and save $25 off your first device.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 30, Episode 7. My name is Chris.
My name is Matt.
Good morning to you, Matt.
Good morning.
Should I tell folks about the big show today?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, coming up on this week's episode of the Linux Action Show, did you see it? Linux desktop just changed forever in a major way. I'm talking about Steam in-house streaming, and it's not just for games, although it works for games too. But actually, Valve included a little extra Steam streaming beta that allows you to stream full Windows applications right to a Linux desktop with minimal overhead. So in the second half of this week's episode, we're going to give you a demo of in-home streaming from Steam, and you're going to see it here on the Linux Action Show like you've not seen it anywhere else or will see it anywhere else. You're going to be able to see screens side by side and compare the latency and performance of them both.
Nice.
And we'll show you how, even if you're not a gamer, even if you don't want to play any video games, you might be loading the Steam client very soon.
Cool.
And then in the news segment, we're going to talk about this new feature that just hit Linux kernel 3.13 that everybody's all excited about. We'll explain what the heck it is and why it's a big deal. And of course, we're also going to talk about some changes in some photo management software. Somebody's taken over a popular photo management application. We'll talk about that. And then there's some major Linux community events coming up in the near term and in the future. We'll cover those. We'll give you a roundup of all of the big fests and community events. And then in the feedback segment, as we approach episode 300 of the big show, we got some cool things in the works, and we've got some questions for you that's going to make post 300 amazing. So we'll give you details about that in the feedback section. That'll be in the latter half of the show. But first, if that wasn't enough, Matt, it's our picks.
Woo!
I know. So let's start with our Runs Linux, and this time we're going to do a little troubleshooting.
Okay.
So this came into the subreddit. It was submitted by Rage311, not the 411 on his Rage.
Not 411.
He says, Tim Hortons runs Linux. Now, Tim Hortons, very popular coffee place up in Canada.
Yep.
People love it. And, of course, now I have an AeroPress, so I'm a coffee snob. Heimer sent me some beans directly from Guatemala, so... Whatever. Yeah, I know. So here, Tim Hortons, check this out, Matt. Now, let's do a little troubleshooting because I'm going to be straight
you
up.
You got the actual error screen.
This is a crash, right? This is how we know it's running Linux.
That's perfect.
A couple of things jump out at me in this Tim Hortons crash. First of all, we see right here, it's a kernel panic.
Yes.
And they're running extended 2 on their file system. I would prefer a journal there. And look at this, 2.6.4.2. But there's the secret is right here in the pudding. This -2EK3 is a patch set that is applied to the kernel, and this is actually the giveaway of who makes this Linux display. It is a company called EK3, and they have Linux powered. All of their displays are Linux powered, and they have some huge clients that are running Linux displays.
Like Microsoft,
McDonald's, Apple, Rogers, Microsoft, Samsung. Nestle, Kraft, Sony, Smucker's, Paramount, Kruger, Toyota, P&G, Rogers, Virgin. I mean, the list goes on and on. Look at all these.
Wow.
Coca-Cola. Look at all these companies here that are running Linux display systems. However, these Tim Hortons boxes, got to say, not too impressed. Kernel panic right here. Couldn't find the root FS. That's a bad sign.
That's a very bad sign. Yeah. It's dead, Jim.
Yeah, it seems like it might be dead. Now, here what's interesting is this conversation thread in the Canada subreddit. One of the guys who deploys these started talking. He said, yeah, well, we've noticed a big change in the last 2-3 years. He says, when we go into these places now to sell them a digital display, the customers feel better when it's not Windows powered. They feel like because this
really?
Is connected. Yeah, well, these are connected to the internet to get live commercial content updates and stuff like that. And they feel safer knowing it's Linux. Now, you could maybe question if it's running Linux that's that old. Is it really that old?
Yeah, exactly. Might as well be doing, ME at this point.
Maybe so. I don't think it's quite that bad,
but it's kind of the same.
Also, they had SE Linux disabled. Obviously not a great idea in a system like this. And you can see right here, EK3 install _patch.
Not without someone local to deal with this stuff.
So yeah, there you go. It's a
interesting.
Those Canadians know what they're doing, and why would you want to mix Windows with your coffee? Don't screw that up.
I remember remember when signs actually had little letters that you had to pull them
yeah.
and put on, you know, back in the old days?
That was actually a job for somebody to do.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, when I was a kid, that ran me.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, back in the
oh,
day.
Oh, yeah. And then you had the ones up on the, up on the these are still around for, in a few places, but way, way up on the billboard, where you had to get the long stick and change it out. And now
I used to do those too.
Now you just SSH into your billboard. And
those poles are tough too, because you try and get it in, then it starts coming down, you miss the sign, and it just kind of like falls. But yeah, it's interesting that they would, for one, use a kernel that old that, you know, they're not really learning from the mistake that perhaps or maybe I don't know. Maybe they'll deal with this. Maybe they'll upgrade stuff and keep it from being a problem.
You know, it's hardened. It's a hardened Linux. And, well, do you have TCP connections inbound?
Exactly.
Oh, well, okay then.
Yeah. What's define hardened? I mean, really.
I'll define hardened right now. I want to thank our first sponsor this week, and that is GoDaddy.com.
Woo!
And we've got a special deal. If you use the limited time promo code 30DEAL8 when you check out, you'll get 30% off anything in your cart. GoDaddy has some rocking brand new WordPress hosting that's been redesigned from the ground up to integrate and make WordPress super fast, super secure, and easy to deploy. You got to go check that out. Another thing is, if you are in a shop that wants to deploy Office 365, and this is a big problem for Linux users where you have a Linux desktop and you have this issue where you got to be compatible, GoDaddy also now has hosted Office 365 offerings. You can try that out with 30% off. That might solve a few problems for some of you Linux users, but I got better news. Now we're solving a problem, because guess who's back, Matt? That's right.
Boom!
Danica's back.
And she has been pumping some iron, son.
This is why she's back. Check out. Tell me if you don't think this is why she chased Van Damme right out.
Holy
look at this.
Crap.
Now that guy, he's pretty popular.
I was gonna say, that's not Danica.
Yeah, no, that's not Danica.
But these are clearly her wingmen.
Good morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Now wait for it. There she is. Look at that.
Holy crap. Holy.
Now, is that CG, man?
I don't know.
They're all going to spray tan.
Holy crap. And she's all like, ah.
Let's go time.
Holy crap. I don't know. Maybe she may have been doing the gym or something. I mean, it's possible. Bulking up, you know.
So big welcome back to Danica.
Yeah,
good to have her. You know, I tell you what. She sounded a little roided out when she called me last night. I was surprised. It was an aggressive phone call.
Chris, this is Danica.
I said, really? And then we have a secret verbal handshake that it's about a mole. Let's just put it that way. And only I know about it. And so I knew it was her because she knew about that. Anyways.
Hey, the fact she's back is awesome. The race car is back. She's going to be doing the whole data center thing. It's going
to
be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So welcome back. And now you can go over and celebrate the return of Danica Patrick by using the promo code 30DEAL8 when you check out over at GoDaddy.com, and you'll save 30% on anything new in your shopping cart. Domains, hosting, hosted Office, WordPress, whatever it is. Put assert. Put a few things in there and buy them all 30% off with 30DEAL8.
Nice.
30DEAL8. 30DEAL8. Thank you to GoDaddy for sponsoring the Linux Action Show.
Definitely.
Okay, Matt, I got a desktop pick this week.
Okay.
It aims to solve a problem. Let's just get this up front. Man pages are long.
Yeah.
Oftentimes,
I've never read them.
A lot of times I'll open up a man page and then I'll scroll all the way to the bottom of the man page and look for an example, and it's hit and miss if it's got an
example.
Well,
they're formatted for robots. I'm sorry. I can't digest information.
It's like, bro, shorten it up and give me the specific details of what I need.
Why can't a bro do this for us?
Matt, this is why I'm excited to announce Bro Pages.
There it is.
That's right. You can go to bropages.org. Bro Pages are a highly readable supplement to man pages.
Yep.
They show concise, common case examples for Unix commands. So, for example, I'll pull it down right here. I got me my terminal, and I got Bro installed. So let's say we'll use their example. Let's say I wanted to learn about commands for curl.
I type
Bro.
Actually written for humans.
Okay. And it comes back with...
Oh, see, that's what I want.
Here's the get the contents of a web page.
Yeah.
Curl, and there's the command. Download a file, curl, there's the command. And then here's what's great, is these are each numbered. See, this one's number one, this one's number two.
That's great.
Number three, I can say, bro, thanks to, and it'll upvote that example.
That's so needed.
So there's a little bit of like Reddit style upvoting for bro commands.
So it's not only social and fun, but it's not like pulling your eye sockets out with a spoon.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. It's like, just get to the point, bro.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, look, we're reliving some ancient way of doing things from old Unix days. It's great.
Here's all of their, it's light right now, but you can also
But it doesn't need to be heavy. It just needs to be formatted in a way it doesn't make my
And you can add your entries yourself, and then the community upvotes them.
That's
so here
great.
Is the current ones. You got tar in here. Here's some great tar examples. And look, you can also just browse the webpage and look at these command examples.
That's nice.
Grep, curl.
Yeah.
So this is a Ruby gem. So you have to have functional Ruby on your system and then gem install. The commands are on the Bro website.
Now, I like it.
If you wanted to really make this a perfect solution, I think at build time, you should have an option to also be like, girl, so it could be bro, or girl, so that way it's more unisex, right?
Right, sure, why not? Absolutely.
I think that
absolutely.
Would, because I think maybe some people be like, well, because, you know, there's
80s and 90s. Like, I remember showing a couple of newer Linux users man pages, and the first thing out of their mouth is like, oh, hey, look, a wall of text. That's great.
Right.
Nobody wants to read that. I don't want to read it in a blog post. I don't want to read it in a man page. I want things easy to digest, something that my ADD mind can absorb in a way that doesn't make me want to scream. And this does it.
Yeah. I've found man pages to be one of those things where
great information, horrible formatting.
And it could be hit and miss. Like some projects don't want to do man pages anymore, so they do something else. Some people say check the man page and it's in there. It's really hit
and miss. And it's truth. I mean, the details are in there, but again, depending on how you absorb information in your little
And the other thing that can sometimes happen is sometimes man pages go out of date. Where this is community maintained, community submitted, and community updated.
Cool.
And you can pull down new bro pages anytime just by doing gem update bro pages. And you install it once you have Ruby set up as gem install bro pages.
Well, I like the fact that you can, instead of saying read the man page, you can be like, bro, read the bro pages. Bro.
Yeah. And look, to add something, it's just bro. Add
I love that. That's cool.
I know.
Bro. Bro. Yo, bro.
It's pretty great. That's pretty great. So,
man bro, right? Yeah, with a manual page for bro.
Making commands more accessible on the command line is always a good thing. So bropages.org, and it should work on just about any box that has Ruby, a recent version of Ruby on it. So you can go check that out. All right, Matt. So this week I was going to do a how-to. I had a how-to plan to coincide with the sunsetting of LogMe and Free.
Right.
You know, because we've seen a lot of people.
People still use that.
And we've seen people in the IRC this week saying, what should I use? We've seen people on the subreddit. We've seen people send us an email saying.
I was really shocked that so many people are still using
it. I know, because we've actually covered this before on the show. So what I want to talk about in our Linux Spotlight this week is I want to remind folks about Splashtop Streamer. Now, this is something that's available for Linux, for Mac, and for Windows, and there's clients on each as well. And we actually talked about this back in Season 28, Episode 3, called Easy Linux Remote Desktop, where we gave you a demo of using Splashtop to remotely control your Linux box from a tablet, from a phone, from another PC. And I'm still using Splashtop today. And what's cool about Splashtop, as long as you have a pretty good processor, it uses X264 for the screen encoding, so you actually get really good performance and quality. And it, you know, it takes overhead while it's running, but then when you stop running, it's minimal overhead.
Well, a couple things I want to address right off the bat. I know Arch users are screaming at their screens right now going, I tried to use it. It didn't work because of the libraries. And I totally feel your pain. I do. There's going to be some instances in some cases, especially if you're running the streamer and then the actual player itself, to where you're going to have to basically overwrite, like pull some libraries and then pop them back in.
I always get this confused. So I have Splashtop Streamer.
Yeah, streamer's your server. Personal's your
personal
viewer.
And the
naming scheme is terrible. I'll give you that.
Yeah, it's a little difficult.
So if you have both installed, sometimes some of the libraries have to be pulled and then popped back in. If you're an Arch user, you'll see it in the errors when you try and install. That's me. It's like, back when we were doing,
we were doing a demo.
I
wonder if I know what my
that could have been
kind of
cool. Hey, that's true.
Well, it doesn't see. It says there we go. So you can see here, it sees one. So this is Splashtop Personal Streamer,
and I run it on my phone too. If I'm like supporting my mom's desktop, you know, regardless of what OS she happens to use, and she's using Ubuntu, but I can log into it real easy. Ubuntu users will find it installs real simple. Generally well for Arch. It can be a little hit and miss. She's got to massage it a little bit.
Oh, I don't have it running on my other computer. I was going to give you a little demo of it, but. So I guess there's some problems with Splash with the streaming with the server side of it.
Yeah, it gets a little. It can be a little funky as far as getting it installed. Now that being said, I have never personally ever had problems with the streaming end of it. The only closest thing I ever had is I was trying to connect to a Mac once and the Mac client dropped. The Mac server rather. So. Outside of that, I've never had a problem with it.
It sounds like some people in the chat room are saying those library problems might be solved by now. Because that was back a while ago.
Yeah, this is a while ago. And I just, overall, it's the most stable experience I've ever had, despite getting it installed, being a little funky on some Arch.
We mentioned some other alternatives in that episode as well, and talked about how you can install it on different distributions. So go watch Season 28, Episode 3, Easy Linux Remote Desktop, if you're a LogMeIn user.
And if you're, guys, I get it. If you're not able to use Splashtop, TeamViewer is fine. It comes with a self-contained wine bottle.
There's lots.
You can go with
I'd like to hear more. In fact, next week I was going to do a how-to on a full remote desktop session where you could do from a Windows, Mac, or Linux box and just get complete remote desktop access to your machine. So we'll probably talk about that next week on Linux Action.
I got to say, though, Splashtop's probably my go-to thing just because it's like,
you get the console.
I literally don't feel like I'm remote. It's like if you have it on a big screen, it's like.
Wait till I show you next week.
Holy crap.
Wait till I show you next
week. Oh, yeah?
It turns a remote computer full-fledged into.
Oh,
it's crazy good. Yeah,
crazy town. Okay, cool.
So I think if everything works out, I always reserve the right to override a topic if some big news breaks.
Right.
Like Steam changing the game for desktop Linux forever! All right, Matt, let's do the news.
Hey, it's the news, and this episode's brought to you by...
Ting.com. Matt Ting is mobile that makes sense. My mobile service provider and Matt's mobile service provider. Boomskis! Yes, we both are rocking our Ting phones. Now, what is Ting? Well, Ting is a totally new wireless service provider that's really changing up the industry. No contracts, no early termination fees, and you only pay for what you use. $6 flat rate.
That's crazy.
That's really your Ting cost, and then it's just whatever you use on top of that. You can get started by going to last.ting.com. That'll take $25 off your first month of service or your first device. If you don't already have a device, and when you get a device, it's really cool. They come in these Ting portfolios. Like they got the little Ting tag on the side.
That's cool.
And they'll put your shipping info in the inside of the front, and then boom, look at this nice yellow interior with the Ting tag in there. I actually like this so much, I've held on to it.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, you could use it for pretty much anything.
It's a little tote now.
Right?
So this is Ting really focuses on the customer experience. Mm-hmm. This is the advantage of the Ting network. And that's why their rates and everything are so awesome and so pro-consumer.
Yes.
And on top of that, they also have an early termination relief program over at ting.com/ETF. It's so crazy straightforward. I love it. Ting's like, hey, you know what? Contracts suck. So let's fix that. So let's help people get out of their contracts so they can switch to Ting. You grab your device, you port your number over to Ting, and you just submit your ETF claim. They're going to give you up to $75 per device to get rid of that. And if you think about it, $75 in Ting dollars, if your average Ting bill is like $30 a month or so, that's going to last
a while.
You're saving immediately because you're only paying for what you use. Every plan includes hotspot tethering, which is amazing. Yep. It just goes against your data. You don't have a special data plan. You don't have to cheat your carrier and route your phone to bypass it. It just is enabled by default. And every device you buy from Ting, you own that sucker right, straight out. It's yours. Just like when you buy a computer, just like these smart devices should be. And you're going to see the rest of the mobile industry over 2014 try to kind of figure this out.
And they're already starting to kind of ease their way out there. Matter of fact, they're even trying to emulate other things.
There's some CEOs out there that are copying other CEOs. But you know what? Ting is the OG mobile carrier that's changing it up. So go to last.ting.com to see what I've been talking about.
Yeesh.
And go try their savings calculator. This will, if I haven't convinced you yet, if the ETF relief program hasn't convinced you yet, if the awesome devices that you own outright haven't convinced you yet, go over to last.ting.com and try out the savings calculator and see how much you'd save on an ongoing basis. Ooh. And then tell yourself in the long run if it doesn't make more sense. And I'll tell you something else. Having these phones outside a contract where you only pay for what you use fundamentally changes the value model. It means that you have a device that is just as useful and valuable to you as the day you bought it. It's not something that you're paying on as it decreases
in value.
Well, you're
not leasing it. You own this.
You own it.
Yeah, no?
And since you only pay for what you use, when you get your next phone, you can keep your old phone around and you can use it for testing software. You can use it for routing and ROMing. You can use it to make it a hotspot, whatever you want, because you're not having to pay into some huge contract that you're not getting all the benefit out of. So it actually gives your devices a longer life. Mm-hmm. And if you're sick of consumerism and buying gadgets all the time, that's a serious value proposition. And then when you factor the fact that they respect you with no contracts and no early termination fees, it's worth trying. So go over to last.ting.com. And a big thank you to Ting for sponsoring the Linux Action Show.
Woo.
Okay, so let's start this week with some kernel stuff. Now, I know it's a little weird. It's a little strange, but you might have seen it going around the web. Mm. NF Tables is coming, and everybody's excited. It's a new feature in Linux kernel 3.13. Well, what is NF Tables?
What is NF Tables?
It's not quite ready for production just yet, but it's been in work since 2009. That's when it was originally proposed, but it hasn't been brought into the mainline kernel until 13.13, and it is designed to replace IP tables.
Oh,
and it's going to
kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, IP tables, everybody knows, is the built-in Linux firewall. And the NF tables is going to have sort of a very interesting design where there's a pseudo machine in the kernel that it creates, and that is going to allow it to support IPv6 and all these other protocols as they come on board. So currently with IP tables, let's just say something new came up that you needed to be able to packet filter.
Sure.
You would actually have to have a new module built for the kernel, rebuild your kernel to get support for that.
Right.
With NF tables, you'll be able to slot in new types of protocols that it can support at the user space level. So this is going to make it much more flexible. But on top of that, PF users have been laughing at IP tables for a while now. Honestly, because IP tables has a few limitations. The syntax is a little wonky. If you have a massively long IP tables list, it can get slow when it's processing this. NF tables will introduce a new natural language. So here's an example. To add a port forwarding rule, you would type in NFT, add rule, filter, forward, TCP, dport, 22, log, and drop. That's
almost like a slightly more advanced version of Ubuntu's uncomplicated firewall.
Yeah,
actually, it really does.
It's almost just a plain language. Yeah. Like you can just learn. You're saying NFT, add a rule on this port to drop this packet and log it every time you do. And it's just straightforward like that.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be a new powerful firewall that's going to stay with Linux for a long time, add a lot more flexibility, and stay competitive. Because honestly, IP tables has been falling back. People have criticized me because here on the Jupiter Broadcasting HQ network, I run a pfSense firewall because I believe that PF is a superior firewall to IP tables.
Right.
Pretty much anything else out there.
Yeah, pretty much.
But this is really exciting to see them addressing this shortcoming, and it's nice not to stand still with this kind of stuff.
I think this is great. I love the and for an analogy, you're talking about being able to swap in modules and whatnot. It's kind of like being able to hot swap a drive, really, without having to like shut something down. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to have that kind of flexibility
versus
going old school.
So pretty nice. Yeah, there's just, it comes to a point where there's some design stuff they can't get around with IP table, so it's time for a new replacement.
Yeah.
Now, it's not fully baked yet, but it's pretty much functional.
It's in the oven. As long as you don't jump around in the kitchen, it's going to continue to rise.
Yeah. I mean, so, you could have a slice, but it's going to taste better if you let it finish.
This is right. Don't eat the dough.
We're going to talk more about Steam and Valve later, but in the news segment, something happened this week that I believe is a good sign. Valve has given the entire Valve catalog of games to Debian developers.
Ooh.
Say, hey, Debian developers. So they reached out to Debian and said, by the way, SteamOS is based on Debian. Super appreciate that, guys. What can we do to make your lives easier and better?
Geez.
And one of the Debian developers was like, well, you could give us games. And so I was like, okay, here you go. Here's all the Valve games we've ever made.
Oh, my God.
Here's a key. You get access to them.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
And they're not done yet. They're still figuring out other ways. But see, two things happened this week that show me that Valve is playing the long game with community, and they have some really good insights here. Because the other story that happened, do you remember when we talked about ye olde SteamOS?
Yes.
That allowed you to install SteamOS on a computer that maybe didn't have a terabyte hard drive, didn't have UEFI. It was essentially
SteamOS. Wasn't the most modern machine in the world.
Yeah. They took SteamOS and they made it available for anyone to be able to use. And this was an interesting thing to watch. How was Valve going to react to somebody immediately, essentially forking their OS?
Were they
going to
go all Donkey Kong?
Were they going to shut them down?
Right.
SteamOS is trademark, blah, blah, blah. No, actually not that at all. Valve worked with ye olde SteamOS to reincorporate the changes they made to ye olde SteamOS to make it work on other PCs, and now have added that functionality to main SteamOS.
They get it, don't they?
They really get it. They really get it.
Wow.
They really understand, they are trying to breed a long-term relationship with the open source community because this is a long-term play for them.
This is great.
Valve, I would not have really considered a Linux company, but when you see the way they're interacting, it really shows a deep understanding of community dynamics. And on the surface, this stuff seems trivial, but I believe it actually betrays a much deeper understanding on Valve's part about how to interact with a community that's really run by egos.
Well, it really is. I feel like they've moved into let's say a fraternity house, and they got the room and everything, but they're trying to make nice with everybody around them and make sure that everybody's on the same page, everybody's cooperating. They said, look, we're gonna make sure there's ample toilet paper, we're gonna stock the fridge. Hey, don't worry about it, we got the beer. They really are taking care of the community here and making sure that, hey, we're not only here to stay, but we're gonna be a good community member as well.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a great sign. All right, but we'll leave it at that because we got a lot more Steam stuff to talk about in the second half of the show. Last week, we talked about photography under Linux.
Yes.
And I think that was last week, right?
Yes.
It all goes by quite fast.
That was kind of like, what?
And one of my favorite photo management applications, aside from Darktable, is Shotwell.
It
sort of strikes that balance of not
really
too much, but it lets me organize all my stuff. Well, Shotwell is being developed by Yobra, the same people who make Geary. And they've announced that Shotwell development is transitioning over to the Elementary OS project.
Oh.
Elementary OS will be taking over Shotwell, so that way Yobra can focus on Geary. They said that Yobra just doesn't have the resources anymore to maintain Shotwell.
Sure.
And the elementary, it's interesting because Geary really seems like an elementary OS email client.
It really does, doesn't it? Yeah, it's kind of the same philosophy.
And now they're taking over the photo management aspect for Yobra, mm-hmm. which I think is probably a good thing. The only thing I worry about a little bit is it's the pace slowing down because Shotwell could use some new features and some modernizations. So I hope it doesn't slow down.
Generally speaking, you get rapid development with a hyperactive, excited community group, usually large-ish numbers, preferably, or a for-profit company. Usually those are kind of your two go-to things. When you have a smaller group of community members, things do tend to slow down a little bit. I mean, there's maybe some initial excitement, but they do kind of – life takes over. You need people that can really dedicate their time to it.
Shotwell's in a tough spot because it's a competitive landscape. You got Digicam. You got Darktable. You got things like Google Photos that also you can use to manage
Digicam's
your photos.
Digicam's where I popped my cherry for photo management in Linux, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a really good application. Yeah. And even the GNOME project itself is creating a photo management application. Mm-hmm. So Shotwell needs to sort of find its footing and, you know, find its reason. And I think it's a good app, but it could use some improvements. I hope the elementary OS design aesthetic is applied, but I hope functionality isn't removed.
Yeah. I'm sure the aesthetic's definitely going to be applied, and I doubt they would remove functionality simply because that really doesn't make any sense unless there's like a conflict somewhere with their aesthetic changes.
Yeah. All right, Matt, we have been racing through the news the last couple of weeks because the second half of the shows have got such good stuff in them.
Yeah.
I want to spend a little bit of time though talking about some upcoming Linux events. First up on the radar is Scale 12X. It's going to run from February 21st to 23rd. At the Hilton Los Angeles Airport, so you don't have to go very far.
No.
That actually sounds pretty doable. And rumor has it, there's going to be a big Firefox OS announcement at Scale 12.
Big deal.
Yeah, the 12th annual Southern California Linux Expo will be kicking off February 21st through the 23rd.
I think people should go just for that. I mean, that's kind of exciting. Like, what is it? What's that big push?
Yeah, I'll be keeping my ear to the ground to find out what it was. Now, coming up in our neck of the woods, April 26th and 27th is Linux Fest Northwest 2014. They are currently accepting submissions for talks and for sponsorships. So if you were interested in giving a talk at Linux Fest Northwest 2014, now is a good time to go over there. We'll have a link in the show notes. I'm just going to tell you this. If you have ever considered going to a Linux Fest Northwest, this is the one to go to. Linux Action Show is going to go big at Linux Fest Northwest. We're going to be there. We're going to be live if you can't make it. Mm-hmm. But afterwards, we're going to have an after party. And I'm not going to go into too much detail yet. I'll tell you more about this later. But one of the reasons why we're telling you about this now, because it's at the end of April, is I would like to give you time to prepare for travel. Because you need to come see us, because it's going to be worth the time. Mm-hmm. And if you're local, I'd like to talk to you further, because we have some big things and we could use some help. That'll all be revealed shortly, but I want to put this on your radars now if you're considering it, because I've already rented out a couch. Couch has already been rented out. People are already making plans.
But if you got air miles or whatever, start putting stuff aside. Clear up your credit card. Whatever you got to do.
Yeah. And for those of you who can't make it, we will absolutely be streaming it live to the best of our ability at the event. But I'm going to just say, you definitely want to come, so just make the plans, okay? Just make the plans.
We're both going to be pumping up on the vitamins this year, too, to
seriously.
Sure we cross
Louise.
Our fingers here.
If my vitamin bear, man.
I remember that. I remember that like it was yesterday. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. Yeah.
So sick. So sick, like, I couldn't drive. Yeah. I was so dizzy. I could. Oh, man.
I was really concerned. And then, of course, everybody's looking at me in this. I'm like,
yeah, I know.
But then Angela literally came in with a cape and just, like, totally took charge and put us all in. Well, yeah, it was amazing.
That's good.
So, yeah, she rocked it.
So the Linux Foundation has also announced its 2014 conference schedule.
Yep.
And I'll go through some of the highlights here. Linux Storage and File System Summit is in March 24th.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Linux Foundation Collaboration Summit, March 26th.
Yes. Yep.
ApacheCon's coming up in the beginning of April. LinuxCon North America, August 22nd and August 20th through the 22nd in Chicago. And you also have LinuxCon Europe, October 13th and 15th. And we also have Embedded Linux Conference in Europe in October 13th.
Good stuff.
There's also Cloud Open Europe on October 13th. So a lot of stuff going on October 13th in that area in Europe.
Yeah, if you're in Europe, there's a lot of good stuff in October for
Cloud
sure.
CloudStack Collaboration in North America. That'll be in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Boy, everybody's having their conferences in Colorado.
What's with Denver? I mean, it's like... Yeah. Yeah, but hey, we're Washington. We got better climate for that.
That's true. So. I don't know why they're not. Well, maybe. Well, see, but Washington hasn't gotten their act together fully yet.
I don't know, man. They've got. You've seen the news on all the lines of like stores they're getting ready to open up in the various counties. It's crazy. Yeah. You can be able to like go to 7-Eleven.
I probably told this story on the show once before, but I was in line for a movie, and the guy comes up to me and says, "Hey, man, you got a light?" I'm like, I don't have a light.
Yeah, it's like,
no. And so, like, okay, cool. Yeah. So he goes to the next guy, hey, man, you got a light? The guy's like, yeah, I got a light. And he lights up for him, and I'm just standing there in line talking to my buddy.
Hey, like, what's that smell?
What is that? Oh, my God, there's somebody smoking weed in the line next to me. Like, this is Washington.
Welcome to Washington. Yeah.
It's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, outside the ice cream place here recently, it was like Bong Central.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're just out there.
It's getting crazy.
Gurgling sure away.
Everybody getting in big fights, right? Everybody getting rowdy.
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah. Domestic violence. Oh, violent crime went through the roof.
Yeah, breaking windows, trashing the place. Yeah, you know, that's what stoners
actually,
always do.
Yeah, actually, the biggest thing, I just had to get them out of the way and get in the door.
Yeah, no kidding.
They offered me. I was like, no, I'm good. Thanks. I'm getting ice cream. I'm fine.
Long story short, come to Linux Fest Northwest. Seriously. I really would like to see a lot of you guys. So as you know, we have some new studio plans in the works, and that new studio should be open in time for Linux Fest Northwest. I don't know if it's going to be fully operational, but the door should be open. So we're going to have a location for collaboration, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So stay tuned for more details on that, and maybe just start penciling that in on your calendar if you can make the trip. We'd love to see you.
Be awesome.
All right, Matt. That's all the news for this week. It's time to talk about something that changed desktop Linux forever, and I'll get you to finally install that Steam client if you haven't yet. But first, I want to thank System76, our segment sponsor. System76.com is where you go to get machines born to run Linux. Listen, guys, I want you to stop fighting with your hardware and have fun with your Linux, and this is how you do it. If you grab a machine like the Ultra Pro, everything works out of the box for every distro. Now, they ship these things with Ubuntu perfectly tuned, perfectly integrated. It is amazing. They've got tons of great desktops and laptops over at System76, including a brand new updated Sable Complete. Now, they have a touch version and without a touch version for a little bit cheaper.
I like that. I like the fact that you have a choice with it now, too.
I really think the Sable Complete would be the perfect, perfect studio machine.
Oh, there wouldn't even
gets out of the way. Yeah. It's got a great screen on there. Super high resolution screen, 1080p, 21.5-inch LED backlit. You can get up to 16 gigabytes of RAM in this bad man.
And I think it can even be mounted to a wall.
Yes, it can.
Which is like, pfft, there it is.
Super awesome. I know. Lots of great machines over at System 76. Mm. Love the Leopard Extreme. Love the Wild Dog Performance. And Retail Performance is my secret crush. But that Ultra Pro, oh, baby, I love that Ultra Pro. So go over to System76.com and get yourself something nice and tell them Linux Action Show.
That's right.
Okay, Matt, so we knew Steam streaming was coming soon.
We did.
But here's the good news. Mm-hmm. It came out if you're part of the beta, and you don't even have to have Steam OS. You just need to have Steam, and you need to have it on multiple computers. Now, I have been banging this thing since it shipped like Thursday or Friday.
You were really excited. Yeah.
Oh, well,
you were like...
Let me tell you a little bit. Let me tell you a little bit about Steam in-house streaming here, Matt. So first of all, let's get the requirements out. You got to have some of these things, or you're going to have a bad time. Number one, you're going to have a powerful enough machine on the server side to play the game, and also with enough headroom to encode it. Now we'll do some testing here, because I think you're going to be surprised at the performance overhead or lack of performance overhead that you actually do have.
Really?
You also need to have a client. The client machine needs to be fast enough to decode the resolution of video you're sending it. So if you have a 1080p display on the server side, or you know a 720p on the server side, that's the resolution that will get sent to the client. The resolution of the game is whatever resolution the server you're streaming it from is. And so your computer has to be fast enough to decode that. So that eliminates some netbooks and some notebooks. So you're kind of out there. You have to have something that could easily play back full screen HD video, for example.
Like a quad core 4 gigabytes RAM kind of area.
Or anything that has accelerated video playback would probably help.
So it doesn't have to be off the client. There's a little more room for maneuverability in the client.
There's definitely some room. Okay. And this is the key thing, too, is you need to have about 3 megabytes of sustained network transfer.
Ooh, yes.
Sustained. Now, honestly, 2.5 megabytes, not megabits, megabytes seem to be the usage. That's going to be trickier over Wi-Fi because Wi-Fi can be up and down and spottier.
Wired connection. Any other things that might inhibit this?
That's pretty much it.
Like, no Netflix while you're doing this?
Be on the same LAN.
Right.
Because they auto-discover each other via packet broadcast.
Okay.
The Wi-Fi, there are people actively testing it. I'll have a link in the show notes to the Steam community forum where they're discussing Wi-Fi testing. So that it is in testing.
Okay.
But so these are the requirements you need to have. You can stream from Linux to Linux. You can stream from Linux to Windows. And you can stream from Windows to Linux. And I think that is where the big thing is. So let's get started. So I should have checked this before we did this, because I got to say, if you're an audio listener of this week is a week to watch, because I have the coolest shot I have ever set up. I didn't even try it yet before the show. I realized just right now we're going to try it live for the first time, Matt.
Okay. Drum roll.
Boom. Oh, we're a little too low. Too high. I mean, but so you see what we have here. Go ahead and minimize your IRC client there. And I want people at home to appreciate the fact that Chris suffered through using Windows just for this demo purpose. And it has been brutal. So maximize the Steam window there, Matt, if you would.
All right.
And so folks can see there's we have Steam on the Windows box and we have Steam on the Linux box.
That's wild.
Yeah, so the Steam under Matt is the Linux machine, and Steam under me is the Windows machine.
So if I move my cursor around, does that show up? Yep, there it is. Yeah. So there's the Windows box.
So we're watching them both in real time.
Okay.
All right, so why don't we start with video games. BioShock Infinite. Awesome game, beautiful game, and I will launch it here from the Linux box.
Okay, you can see I'm not touching the Windows box at all. You're doing this from your Linux box. Okay.
And here's my Linux box, and you can see I have BioShock just listed in my library of installed games. Now, obviously, BioShock Infinite isn't available for Linux.
No, you're out of luck, right?
Neither is Borderlands. But you see how when I have a game that's available, I get the play option. When there's a game that's on a remote computer, I get the stream option.
Oh, dude.
If we both have the same game, I get play or stream. I can also remotely install games on the machine. And down here, even though this Forsaken game is installed on the Windows box, I actually have the ability to manage its updates in Steam from my remote machine. So I could actually execute an update for that on the remote computer.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So let's go back to our double shot here so you can see both computers in real time. I love this shot. This is so cool. So I will start BioShock Infinite, and you guys can sort of watch some of the pros and cons of the Steam startup process. So as it launches, this is really cool. On BioShock Infinite under Steam, you get two different options. The remote Steam client recognizes that and says, do you want to play BioShock Infinite or launch the benchmark utility? Because that's what's available if you were to launch it under Windows. So that communication is happening on the remote machine. I'll just say launch BioShock Infinite. So it prepares to start. You see it's preparing to start on the Windows machine over there
as
well.
There's activity happening. Things are happening. Oh, my God. The game's playing. And it's playing both computers.
Yeah. So now what I want you guys to watch is see if you perceive any latency between these. Now, we'll have to let it load up because it's just,
We're going through our splash screens and whatnot.
But you can kind of see they're in sync right now, right?
Yeah, thus far, they seem to be spot on.
I would download the HD version if you guys really want to see this because it can be a little blocky on the live stream. But, okay. So,
live stream's not going to do it justice.
And there have been, so I've probably played about 2 hours of BioShock Infinite.
This is crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. And by the way, I'm going to use my controller while I'm doing this. I've got the Xbox 360 controller hooked up to my remote computer.
This is awesome.
And I'm now controlling BioShock on the remote computer using my Xbox 360 controller here. And you can see there's pretty much when that computer does something, it happens on the other computer almost immediately. There's sometimes like for loading screens, there's a bit of a difference. But once the actual DirectX application is started, so now I'm playing with my controller.
Yeah, and I'm watching it here locally in the Windows box, and it's like he's going to town.
Yeah,
it's happening.
And there's zero latency. When I do something here on the controller, it immediately happens on my current system. It's streaming at 1080p right now, and what I'll do is I will let's go up to system monitor right here. You can see I have GNOME system monitor running.
Oh, that's real reasonable.
I'm using about 1.8 megabytes a second of network transfer. Yeah. My memory usage is below 20%.
Yeah, your memory usage is squat.
And my CPU usage is below 20%
really
on my client machine.
Yeah, it makes me think the client machine, really, you could get away with some pretty reasonable stuff.
Yeah, so let's go back to the game. It's a little tricky because when you go out of the game, it disappears, but you can alt-tab back to it, no problem.
Oh, dude, this is great. Yeah. Oh, here it is. It's like, I'm totally working. Click, click, click.
I think I crouched somehow. There we go.
Now, here's the $10,000 question. Yeah. So, you got the Windows machine at home, and then you're also at work in another location. You're thinking, boy, I really don't want to work today. Can you stream in?
Well, I suppose if you, I don't know. I think the latency might be too high.
Okay. So on a LAN is...
when I do something here on this controller, it is immediate. There's zero delay. There's BioShock. You get it though, right?
Right.
So let's try a few more things.
So for remote, it might be a little bit of a latency.
I think so.
But it'd be fun to try.
And so you see how it closes already on the Windows box, and it takes a second to close the Linux box. That's normal.
Sure.
We'll do another game. Here's Batman Arkham Origins, a very graphically intensive game. And I've noticed with Arkham Origins. Now, okay, here. You see how my logo is full screen on the
Linux
box? Yeah,
and then this little mini guy over here.
Everything that streams come across full screen. So if you have a loading badge or box, it goes full screen.
Interesting.
And then once the application starts, it'll adjust to full screen here, too. All right, so now they're both pretty much synced up. Initially, I found with Batman that the intro is a little bit stuttery on the streaming end. But then after that initial startup, and I want to stress something here. A screen, like right now, if you listen to the audio, it's a little stuttery sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's a little stuttery, but not bad. That clears up.
So this is the stuttering and whatnot's only the intro.
And it's only the audio.
Oh, okay.
So this snow animation, this is one of the hardest things for video compression to do. And I don't know how it's showing up on the stream, but Matt, I would say
Here locally, it looks natural. Actually, I think it looks better on the streaming.
Yeah, the Bonobo's got a good screen.
Yeah, so it's really able to utilize those resources on that client machine.
That's
a little
really
stuttering
cool.
here.
Okay.
A little bit of stuttering. That all clears up once you get past this part. And then once you actually get into the video game, it's smooth as butter. And I'll just play. Oh, except for I minimized it. Don't minimize.
That's a good thing. Good to know.
So here we go.
Easy recovery, though.
Here's Batman Arkham Origins, one of the coolest games out there right now.
It seems to be flowing really well.
I'm a huge Batman fan.
God.
And it's recognized
really
my controller. It's already recognized my controller.
That's graphically great.
Isn't that great?
That's just, like, real as hell.
And now, again, I'm playing with the Xbox 3 Sizzle controller, or I can switch to the mouse and keyboard. I can interchange them on the streaming client. No bits.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I'll just show you real quick so, again, you get a sense of latency. And then we'll switch to some other types of applications.
Yeah.
Now, for gamers, this is great. And it works.
Yeah.
It shows you how you could take an Alienware Steam box that's maybe going to have an Iris graphics in it. And you,
exactly.
As long as you had a Windows machine to dedicate to streaming and you're okay with having, because right now that machine, that Windows box is completely utilized, right? You can't use it for anything
exactly,
else.
Right. So you got a dedicated, reasonably strong server machine that you're using. And then your client, you can use something.
I want to point something else out, too. Mm. The server is running an ATI graphics card. My client is running an NVIDIA graphics card. A lot of people were thinking you had to have NVIDIA on both ends to make this work.
Apparently not.
I have an ATI 6900 series in the server machine, and I'm using that over here streaming to an NVIDIA machine.
What are the specs in the Windows box? We got a chat room.
It's a i7 2.6 gigahertz or 2.7 gigahertz. It's got 8 gigabytes of RAM in it, and it's got an ATI 6900 series video card. So it's like a generation ago. It's not even the most current generation stuff.
It's a reasonable machine, but it's not bleeding edge by any stretch.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one problem I have with it is it has horrible slow hard drives. I don't know what's wrong with it. So despite that, it's still... one thing to consider is if in this setup, if you have a weak link, if you have a machine that it has a bad video card or has a slow hard drive, like in my case, even if your remote machine is a badass, if your server machine has slow disks, you're going to experience slow load times.
Gotcha.
In your gameplay, like I see right
Gonna
here.
Have a bad time.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing that's kind of cool is Steam includes some beta. I'll go full screen.
Oh, dude, that's cool.
So I get, I can pull up stats right now. I can see I can get my current frame rate. I can get my network transfer. I can see that it's complaining that the hard drives are slow. And then this moving graph right here is the millisecond latency between my computer and the server computer, which gives me a good idea of how my network is performing.
That's really helpful.
Or if someone's like, if something goes on somewhere else in the house, you know that something's happening.
Yeah, or if you're on Wi-Fi, you know, this thing might be going really crazy.
And by having that tool, you know whether or not it's a latency issue, whether it's what's going on.
And you can see here it says, this is really hard to see down in the left corner, but it says link utilization using 5% of estimated bandwidth. And it tells me it's using right now 24 megabits. And I get my incoming bitrate, which right now is peaking up almost at 5 megs when it does a scene change like that. Here's Batman. And I can...
Oh, holy crap. I thought that was still part of this. That's gameplay.
This is gameplay.
Wow.
Look how good this looks. I know, right?
Yeah.
And here it is full screen on the Linux box.
Whoa.
You can see there's... I'm moving the camera around fast.
And here locally, and I'm speaking locally, not the Wirecast part of it, there is no tearing on the Linux box.
Right. No. There's no tearing on our version. Now, the capture shows a little bit of tearing.
Yeah, the capture you're going to see because of the capturing. But here locally, it's...
I need to follow the trail of destruction to find an open black mask.
Yeah, it's really great, right? And look,
So
and, and you're being instructed to hold crotch or hold crouch?
Crouch, yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's like, way ahead of you.
I'm pretty impressed with these remote games so seamlessly detect when a controller is hooked up or not. I mean, I don't know why. That being able to detect the remote input capabilities to me is pretty cool.
Remember having to map everything for
Yeah, exactly.
Even Windows or otherwise didn't matter. Not every day you gotta map it. Gotta map your life.
Aren't these graphics incredible?
Just, I guess I thought it was like part of the...
You thought it was pre-rendered.
Yeah, right? I thought it was totally part of the whole intro deal. That's just...
No, please, not at all!
That had to hurt.
Oh, don't watch, kids. Don't watch. Yikes.
Hey, Batman beats Batman.
What's that? Behind you!
This is probably a good spot to stop showing it, but I just wanted to demonstrate. This is, we were watching the streaming client side here. So, oops, so I just exited out from the remote side, and now it's closed out on the Steam side, too, because I decided we don't need to wait for that. All you have to do to have the two machines talk is just have them both on the same LAN, have a beta version of Steam, and they automatically detect each other. I have another Windows box I tried it on, and they would show up, too. Wow. So there's games, and they work. I've also been playing Borderlands 2. But let me show you Adobe Photoshop.
Oh my God! This is what I was interested in.
This is big. This is a big deal. So you can see again, Photoshop loading box goes full screen. But now here I am. I'm now running Photoshop CS4, and I tried this, by the way, with the latest version from Creative Cloud. I downloaded their demo.
Yeah,
totally works. You can see I'm running Photoshop.
There's no weird whininess
CS4
to it,
right here. And sometimes there's even a way you can trick it to actually expose the window. Yeah, look. So now I've actually exposed the Windows desktop.
Holy cow.
And I can get to any
wow.
I can get to any application on the Windows desktop.
Weird. Oh my, seriously?
And what's interesting is actual desktop applications seem to perform worse than video games. Now, it's still totally usable, but there's a little bit more of a latency in...
Because it's not been pipelined for that.
I think Steam's capturing from DirectX. And
I bet it probably is.
Yeah, and this game, and this file, this Photoshop here isn't using DirectX to work. So, but you could see there's a tiny bit of delay there.
Right, so when you're using...
Which could get frustrating, but I also suspect there's going to be, ways to sort of... Oh, you hit no there for me?
Yep.
There's going to be ways to sort of clear that out. All right.
Yep.
So there's one. Now, we have to wait a second for the Linux client to start. So there's you can get Photoshop. Let me show you another one that people might find useful, especially this time
Steam,
of year.
Last year?
QuickBooks.
Okay.
Everybody always wants to know, how do I run QuickBooks on Linux?
Holy crap.
This is how you can do
it
now. You don't need Wine. You don't need VMware.
Oh, my God.
You just go put QuickBooks. So think about this. Think about an office, right? An office that has one Windows box and maybe a dozen Linux boxes, okay?
Oh, man.
And you could have all of these Linux boxes pull from that Windows machine when they need to stream an application. So now I'm running QuickBooks with good performance under Linux. That's a huge deal, right?
That is wild. I mean, that's ginormous.
Yeah.
Here's the mind blow. You're in a small office. You have one Windows box that's dedicated for Windowsy stuff. You have multiple
it's
Linux
like a terminal
workstations.
Server
exactly like a terminal
mm-hmm,
server.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Steam. Steamy.
All right.
Cool.
So this one, I haven't figured out all of the kinks yet, but here's another use case. Perhaps you want to stream Firefox.
Oh, right.
Now, why would you want to stream Firefox?
I can't imagine why.
Netflix. So now we can watch Netflix without Pipelight, without any kind of hacks. Here is straight up Netflix running on my Linux box, being streamed from my Windows computer.
And this right here would be it for me. I mean,
and look,
it really would.
If I need to multitask out, I can go out, I can go do whatever else. Maybe I want to go check out my system monitor, see what's up. And then when I'm done, I go right back and boom, I'm watching Trek now.
That is crazy. And it's the performance is good.
Now, the one problem with Firefox, and Chrome doesn't have this issue, is when I close it on my remote system. So if I go here and I exit out, it doesn't actually close it on the Windows system.
Right.
So I'll need you to close that for me. Now, under Chrome, it does. So I bet there's like some sort of key combo that I could use to clear that out.
Undoubtedly.
I think that would do it. So, I'll give you a quick demo of Borderlands 2. Because again,
I bet what you could do is you probably like here on the Windows box, set up some sort of a batch file to where, you do something and close whatever.
Or I bet there might even be like a Control W key command.
That'd be the smart way to do it.
So look at the differences here. You see how the Borderlands logo.
Yeah, it's all like.
So that's one bit of wonkiness, but that's just.
But that's okay. You don't really want it.
Yeah.
You want to know someone's streaming it and it's not just launching on its own.
So you can see here, we got Borderlands 2 firing up. And I love the possibilities this presents because it's free, right? It's included. Oh, we lost our signal over there. I guess it probably did a video mode change.
Okay.
So it's it's working. It's just
gotcha.
Here, I'll just show it full screen over here.
Okay.
Because when games change the resolution under Windows, it freaks the HDMI card out.
Makes sense.
Windows is
That's a Windows problem. I got not a Steam issue.
I got it. Yeah, I got to tell you, it feels like sometimes you're working in the 80s with Windows.
Windows.
Yeah. All right. So what I was going to say is, even if you're never going to play a single game, if you just have a Windows box on your LAN and have some applications like Photoshop mm-hmm. or QuickBooks that you need to run from time to time, or Netflix, Valve has enabled this intentionally. In their release notes, they say add the ability to add games to Steam. So the trick is, all you do to make this work is you go into your Steam client, and here I'm in Borderlands. You go into your Steam client,
right.
And you just say add game to library, and then you browse to the executable that you want to add to your Steam library. So I've been playing, I downloaded Star Trek Online, and I've been playing Star Trek Online through Steam, even though I didn't download it in Steam.
Oh my God, that's great.
And I'm able to play it now under Linux with great performance. I've played Star Trek Online for a couple of hours this weekend using Steam streaming. So here's Borderlands 2, and you can see it's totally fluid, totally functional.
And again, live stream does not do it justice as far as the fluidity.
Because
here locally, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
and you'll see that in the download.
Yeah, in the HD version. It really does look flawless. I mean, it performs flawlessly. And the other thing I think is really cool is I'm switching interchangeably between mouse and keyboard. I don't care. It's like whatever I want, that's what I get.
And it's just going to work for you. It doesn't mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's I guess there's some games that are having some controller issues. I haven't run into those games yet. It's still beta, so I mean,
well, it's still beta, and the fact that you're getting this volume of games working really well out of the box is a thumbs up.
Yeah, so I'll just give you a quick example here, Matt. If you would bring up the Steam client there, maximize that, and then that's right, we lost our capture. I was going to show you how you can add a game. I'll demo it on the Linux box.
Okay.
So you add game. And you say browse or add a non-Steam game. Add a non-Steam game. And then it will automatically populate with all of your installed applications on Windows or Linux.
Whoa.
Or you can also go manually browse to the executable if you want. And then you add it here, and it will then show up to all of the computers on your network that have this new beta.
So not just
Steam.
The local machine, but all the computers on the network. That's really nice.
And you can also stream Linux applications to Windows boxes.
Ooh.
Right? So we could give it a shot. I don't know if it's going to work. And,
we'll
add selected. Now,
we'll
if you pull up Steam over there, now, unfortunately, we won't have a capture of it. But click on library.
Okay.
And then look up towards the top. You should see Armorok at the top there. Yeah. So click stream.
Okay.
And let's just see what happens. I don't know if
we're totally gaming this. We have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, some things work and some things don't work.
It started to go, and then I don't know if it's still going or not.
No. Some Linux apps works, and also, by the way, same with the Mac. Some Mac stuff works, some Mac stuff doesn't work. It's just kind of...
But the important thing is you can take your Windows games and get them on your Linux
And your
box.
Windows applications and get them over to Linux.
And that's the only way you're really going to care.
I was able to stream Dust, an Elysian Tale, from my Linux box to Windows, and mm-hmm. I played it on Windows from my Linux box.
Nice.
So that worked really well. The game you're streaming, it has to run okay. Oh, this is important.
Oh, okay.
This will be a gotcha. In fact, maybe I could demo it real quick here. I'll bring this up. So I had a new race car game. I can't remember what it's called. Do we have your screen back now? Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
good.
We do. Yep.
Awesome. So I downloaded. So if you have any game that you've never ran before,
right.
And on Windows, this is so annoying. It has to go like through this first time setup.
So if you've never run the game natively on Windows, then there's a first time setup if you want to stream it.
Yeah, and that will sometimes break the Steam streaming. Here we go. Next car game. I installed this last night on my Windows box. I've never ran it before. I'm going to stream it now to my Linux box. And when I click stream, it starts up on the Windows box.
Oh, here, yep. That's
okay, well, so far. Okay, so this actually didn't happen with this game. This must be using OpenGL. When a game is using DirectX on Steam, it has to, under Windows, reinstall the Steam distributables.
Oh, my God.
And that process brings up a UAC prompt. UAC prompts completely break Steam streaming.
And of course, we're Windows workaround. That's kind of the go-to thing. Disabling UAC?
That would do it.
That'd probably do it. And really, UAC is a joke anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
you could totally disable UAC.
Yeah.
Or if you just run the game once on the Windows machine and go through the UAC prompt, it will handle it. Here's the interesting thing. If you don't get a UAC prompt, like if you disable it, like Matt just said, and then you click stream for the first time over here, The remote client will actually come up with a prompt saying, hold on, your remote machine is doing a first-time run setup. You're
going
to have to wait a few seconds while the remote machine does this. I found that to be really useful because initially I was doing this. I was in my office.
Right.
Streaming machine's out here.
Yeah.
So I couldn't see the screen. I didn't know what the heck it was doing. So the fact the Steam client comes back and says, hey, yo, bro, you're going to have to wait a little bit. Bro, simmer down, bro. And then I did.
I'm going to let you finish, but first I need to. Yeah, exactly.
So I think this is an incredible opportunity. I actually picture a day at Jupiter Broadcasting where we have multiple Linux boxes for Ange, for Rekai, for myself, and we're all working in the studio, and we need that one Windows program. Maybe it's After Effects. Maybe it's Photoshop. And instead of having to license that for everybody and maybe give them a Windows VM or some crap like that, I'll just put one Windows Steam box on my LAN.
That's awesome. And I love that. Yeah. And like you said, it's kind of got like a terminal server thing kind of going on.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. So
for applications, that's a big deal.
Valve is really kind of shaking it up here. And I'm going to tell you guys, I played BioShock Infinite. I mean, I've got 6 hours total. I probably played 2.5 of those or so, two of those under streaming without a hitch. I also played about 2 hours of Star Trek Online under streaming without a hitch.
Nice.
And I played Batman Arkham Origins. All of these games, you guys, all of these games played flawlessly, with maybe like the audio glitching at the beginning or something like that. But some games don't even have that.
You could. Here's a giggle idea. You could probably run this headless if you just make Steam auto start. You know, that'd be kind of interesting.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, it's like you want to free up a monitor. It's like, I'm not. You don't deserve a monitor. You're a Windows box.
As long as the game would start without a monitor. Right, I don't know. But
it'd be kind of hit and miss. You'd have to
try. But still, I mean, it literally for me is like this machine's on. It doesn't run Windows all the time, but it could run Windows all the time. And I could just, whenever I want to play Stone now under Linux, I don't have to worry about Wine. And Wine works for some of these games, but like there's always something that doesn't work. Like on Star Trek Online, ground combat doesn't work. Now that's completely not even, a non-issue.
Whatever, right?
And the fact that the controller integration seems to be working
so
well.
That's so cool, especially with the streaming. That's what really kind of blows my mind is that it's able to interpret that. It's like,
yeah.
Ooh.
So it's obviously, it must be doing some sort of GPU accelerated video encoding on the server side, because I've watched the server side too, and the CPU load, really the only thing I see registering on the CPU is Steam itself and then the game. The encoding, all of that seems to be all included in the Steam binary. I didn't see separate processes forking out for the encoding.
But I think I prefer that. I really do.
Yeah. And it also works in Steam Big Picture mode.
Ooh.
So you could see how you have a Steam box, you have Big Picture mode, you could pull down all kinds of applications to a Steam box in the living room. This brings up a whole new type of applications you could bring
that
to your living room.
Literally blends console and gaming rig. It makes it a moot issue. It really does at that point. That's cool.
So you will you'll need to be in the Steam beta. I'll have a link where you can join that group if you want to get in the beta. Then they invite you after a period of time.
Yes.
Some applications, when you run them, like QuickBooks, lose their title bars. Some don't. If you're tricky enough, you can get to a full Windows desktop, which is pretty awesome. And don't forget, everything you stream will be full screen, from loading boxes to everything else. It's pretty nice, though.
This is very cool. I mean, because I think folks that are not gamers are thinking, who cares? You're going to care, I think, if there's specific legacy apps you need from Windows. That's the point where you're going to be like, okay, now I'm interested. I'm running QuickBooks on a Linux box.
The other IT dudes
kind of a big deal.
Started in our subreddit. He was playing with Steam streaming, and I kind of echo the way he feels about this. He says, my life is now complete. I can now change my main PC to Arch and stream my games either to the laptop or my NVIDIA Shield from the desktop. And
that nails it.
So I kind of have this policy now where I only buy games available for Linux. Like even if it's a game I really, really want.
Right.
And this is something
I can understand that because you're trying to vote with your wallet. Yeah.
Now, though, this does mean that as somebody who's opted to use Linux's main OS, I no longer have to feel left out when something really big, some seminal game like BioShock Infinite is released.
Yeah, because that's hard to say.
I'm
no
not left
to that.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can now participate like all Windows users. And what's kind of cool is because it works so well, there's a bit of an advantage because the resource load on my machine is so low that like there's no heating up.
Right.
There's really no pushing of my machine. So I can have BioShock Infinite running in one workspace, and I could have a very demanding task going on my machine at the same time, and the two do not compete with resources. So it really is awesome.
One question I had, and I think it would be interesting, is let's say you had the most beefy server machine in the world. I mean, this thing can handle anything you throw at it. Can you run multiple things in Steam at the same time, or can you run multiple instances of Steam if you have multiple people doing it?
Well, we could try it. I don't think so.
I can't imagine you would, but it'd be interesting.
Let's launch QuickBooks and see if we can launch Firefox at the same time. I don't believe so. Like, for example, you cannot launch two of the same application.
That's fair.
So I couldn't start up Firefox. So here's Firefox.
Okay.
And I'll alt-tab out to Steam. And now let's go try QuickBooks and see if that
turns out.
Just for
giggles. Because if you can, whoa. That would be holy.
All right,
cow.
So now I'm going to hit play on QuickBooks.
Oh, my God, it's working.
It is
over here. Yeah, it's working.
Okay, so now I don't see it over here yet, though. So I'm wondering if the Steam client... I don't think the Steam client supports it, but it seems the Steam server does, yeah.
Interesting. Can't so connect. Potentially at some point, maybe the client will?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Maybe. Will you kill all of those and Firefox for me, too? Oh. But so much fun.
Oh, man.
Playing these games that haven't been accessible, that have been locked away in my Steam library for a long time, like Batman Arkham Origins, never got to play it. I've always been hoping and hoping and hoping. I bought it when it was on Steam sale, hoping it would come to Linux. And now I get a little taste of it before it's even here.
Just the intro alone, it's enough to get your, you know, get salivating a little bit.
Yeah, this is so much fun. And the fact that you can add games or add any application on your Windows box or on your Linux box and stream them both ways, mind-blowing.
So this, and this is for my wife, on her Mac, she can have Photoshop running.
Yeah.
And then
you can pull Windows applications to the Mac. You can pull – I haven't been able to pull any Mac applications to Linux. But,
boy, oh boy.
Yeah. Mm. It's – Valve has just opened up a massive can of worms that is going to once again trivialize Windows and empower Linux, because I can now have one Windows box serve dozens of Linux boxes, the one application they need, and it gives me an easy way to replace that application too later on down the road. So it's
I like it.
It's a huge innovation, and it's going to be coming to all Steam clients soon if you're not already in the beta. Look forward to try it. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, I think this goes way beyond gaming. The gaming is just frosting on top of a much larger cake.
Some people are wondering if the desktop streaming component will get pulled out, but Valve intentionally added it. So
I don't think why would you pull something out that yes, it's a pain to support, but look at what it changes and does. Mm-hmm. It makes you a major player outside of just gaming.
And it shows you how serious they are about doing this.
Because all of a sudden your marketplace just opened up to a whole new realm of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let Chris play some more video games.
That's right. And that's important.
Good. Yeah.
That's
important. All right, Matt. Well, that's our look at Steam in-house streaming. That brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. But hey, Matt.
Yeesh.
Before we get out of here, I thought maybe we'd cover some emails.
All right.
Our first one, we got this, came in over Twitter, came over email, came over the Reddit. Everybody wanted to know, hey, what theme is Chris using on his Firefox? I actually talked about it a little bit recently, but I tweaked my Firefox theme to get rid of the title bar and really make it look like a straight up native GNOME 3 application. It's actually broken right now. It's got a little gray overlay that is happening on the top towards the top. I don't know why that's happening.
Yeah, it's some weird theme rendering.
I would love to have somebody tell me how to fix that, because it otherwise is so gorgeous. Here's a screenshot of it where you see it without that.
Back when it was working, right?
Yeah, when it didn't have that gray overlay, if I could grab that there. You can see it looks much better in this screenshot.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, without the gray overlay. I don't know why that happened.
Yeah, weird.
But anyway,
that looks cool.
So the way I did it, and the Banderlog 33 in the subreddit linked to, there's a collection on the Firefox extensions. You install all of these, you do a little tweaking, Bob's your uncle, you now have an integrated Firefox looking theme.
Stuff.
Starts with this GNOME 3 theme. This is one of the most important things you need to do. And then also this H tile. And then lastly, GNOME theme tweak also helps. And then if you really want to integrate it with your GNOME desktop, GNotifier integrates Firefox notifications with the native GNOME notification system. So you get like download complete notifications.
That's
kind of
cool.
Tray. Yeah. So that's how you find out. A lot of people had asked, so I wanted to cover that. Penguin McFrosty wrote in, says the Penguins are coming. I just wanted to share a success story with you regarding Linux in my workplace. I work in one of the world's largest companies in the IT sector. I can't say names, but let's just call them Big Blue.
Ah, yes. Google.
Big Blue has, you think?
No. I mean, Google Big Blue and you'll know who it is.
Oh,
it's
oh.
not Google.
Yeah, no. I think I know who it is.
Three letters.
Yeah, exactly. It says, Big Blue, it has become mandatory to use our own version of Linux if you're a privileged user. Isn't that, it's like, hey, okay, man, if you want network, hey, bro, if you want network admin rights, you need to run Linux, is basically what he's saying. Mm-hmm. He says the standard image is based on Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6.4, but you can also use Fedora 19 or Ubuntu 12.10 with a compatibility layer installed. Some users, including myself, have been forced to run Windows 7 in a virtual machine inside Linux because of a dependency on one single application, which links proxies together in a chain. Kind of like proxy chains. But I recently managed to hack together proxy chains 4 to provide just that functionality, which in turn meant that me and my entire team were able to throw Windows out the window. a big success, which is now being replicated in other teams in the company. Just wanted to share the story, and thanks for listening. Thanks for the awesome show. You know, that's interesting. I think this is brilliant because so many times on TechSnap, when we talk about corporate breaches, it always comes through Windows.
Yes.
The Target hack with people's cards. Malware was installed on Windows XP embedded point of sale systems. And that's how they captured the credit cards back to a central control server. We went into detail on TechSnap. Mm. Windows should not be ran in anywhere that's important for network security.
No.
It's good to hear Big Blue also feels the same way. I want to give a quick plug over at linuxcareers.com.
Yeah.
New job board. I'm always trying to help folks find jobs because I know there's lots of guys out there and gals looking for jobs. LinuxCareers.com. It's a board of the features only Linux Careers. No affiliation with them, but they launched this week, so I wanted to give them a plug. And you can go check them out.
It's really clean. I like the way they laid it out.
Yeah, and you can go right here. You can say, okay, it's U.S. only. Right
and they now. Also do home. I love the fact that unlike other job boards, they have a home-based option in addition to states. That's awesome.
So I apologize to our viewers around the world. As of right now, it is U.S. only, but for you in the U.S. looking for a gerb, which there are lots of you.
Well, and a lot of job sites are regional only. I mean, you know.
What are you going to do?
You know, that's just what it is.
Kind of makes it more scalable. All right, so we're approaching episode 300 of The Big Show, and in the show notes, and I'll put it in the chat room right now too, we're going to have a form that I would like you to fill out. It's going to kind of help us figure out some post-300 content. Mm-hmm. And we have a call right now up on in the show notes. For the type of how-to that you would like to see on a future episode of the Linux Action Show, we have a form you can fill out. This gives us a little information about the how-to. We want to know who you are, and we have a couple other questions for you in that form. Please go to the show notes and fill that out. There's a link as well as an embedded form. We're just trying to collect some post-300 data for plans, and we'll announce our official plans in episode 300 for the information you give us. So please help us by going over there and filling that out. It's nothing creepy or anything like that. It's just a Google spreadsheet that we're collecting all of them.
Yeah, very vanilla.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Well, what are you up to this week?
As always, you can find me at datamation.com/open source.
Bob's your uncle.
I'm putting up an article. I think I'm going to have two this month, but usually it's one article a month. You can always check them out there. And, of course, Linux Unplugged.
Linux Unplugged. We'll have a link to Matt's GNOME, the key to Linux
desktop
unification.
Yes, I've been kind of borrowing. I was like, oh, we have such great
I read that.
The
I
show.
Like that.
I'm just going to basically expand.
Dude, you know what you got to do?
We
get so many. So if you watch live, by the way, Linux Action Shows Live, jblive.tv, 10 a.m. Pacific. You can get it in your local time, jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar. We get titles. People can bang suggest titles.
Yeah.
And then we vote on the titles. Sometimes we get so many good titles that we can't use them all. You got to go in there, grab a few, and just make the... Do you get to pick the title of your article?
Not really.
Oh, because that would make...
Sometimes.
There would be some good titles in there.
There would be some very good titles. I mean, it just depends. Usually not really, but every once in a while I do.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. You can find a link to Matt's most recent article over at Datamation. Cool. And of course, like you said, check out Linux Unplugged
always,
on Tuesdays.
Always.
Our virtual lug. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much everything we had to cover. If you want to get a hold of the show, go to jupiterbroadcasting.com, pop the contact link, and fill out that information. Choose Linux Action Show from the drop-down, and then our robots will deliver it to the appropriate destination for further processing. There you go. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for tuning in this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. We'll see you right back here next week. So, should I open this up? What do you think?
Yeah, go for it.
Let's do it. Wom, 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 wom. What do we got here?
It does. It has a
the
a
Energy
mini USB.
Flex Pack.
Yeah.
So, this is like a portable battery?
Yep. And
I
checked it. It does have USB.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
That's great.
I have them stashed. I personally, I have different models, but I love these things. I got them all over the place.
That's extra handy. Because
you got an extra one. Keep one in the truck, one in the house.
The Nexus 5 and the HTC One, both of them don't have removable batteries.
There you go.
So when it's dead, it's dead. Whereas with the Note, you could pop it out and put a different battery in. So this is really cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
The Energy Pack.
Yep.
Pack. All right. Oh my God!
You can see why I was going to put a picture on.
Yeah, buddy.
If you at home have ever wanted to try and mimulate Chris's hair, this is kind of like a
Oh, it's green, so it keys out.
Yeah, it keys out too. The starter kit.
Chia pet. Chia pet.
Chia pet. The pottery that grows. It's fun and easy.
Sort of, and it's funny because I've seen that reaction. Well, it's great that Steam streaming is working, but it's not like you're running under Linux. That.
That's kind of not true.
That's. I don't think that matters. Well, and I'll tell you why. Because as long as I have access to the application, that's all I need, right?
See, the whole point of the segment is that it's bringing Linux out of the cold as far as legacy applications.
Yeah, it's
That's the whole point.
It's one of those things where there's 1,000 people who have 1,000 reasons they can't run Linux, and for all of them, it's like, oh, I totally switched to Linux, but I can't run Publisher. Yeah. Oh, I totally switched to Linux, but I need Photoshop. Yeah. I totally switched to Linux, but I need XYZ to work with my company. For us, it could be Photoshop because people send us things as PSD files, and we need to open them up, change them, and send them back. But I don't really need Photoshop, and I'm sure as hell not going to install a virtual machine just for Photoshop. And Wine is a solution, but I can't run the latest version. But with this, I could run the latest version, and I can always continue to run the latest version. So I get one Creative Cloud subscription on one Windows box, and then every machine now in my entire house, Mac or Linux, gets access to Photoshop.
That's right. Now, if you want to do a Linux thing across the board, okay, you got a Linux box upstairs that acts as a server. You want to have something a little more console-like friendly downstairs to play games on. This is a great opportunity to do so because you can have Linux streaming to Linux and actually have something that's not a gigantic big old tower sitting next to your TV set. You can have something a little more streamlined, a little more friendly.
It's kinda cool. It gives you that. It's like when you're trying to quit smoking and you get that gum. It's like the Nicorette gum for switching to Linux.
You still have
a little bit of a hook in the Windows, but you want to switch over to Linux, and this is kind of going to let you do it. And then eventually, you just sort of age out that component you're still streaming.
And in the meantime,
you get great performance. You get network wide sharing. That's dead simple. Yeah. Just run Steam on both ends. Bob's your uncle. You got it.
Well, I think the fact there's actionable, here's why I care, use case scenarios to where this can be applied to small businesses or just to home entertainment. Netflix streaming. Hello.
Won't it be interesting too? Yeah, Netflix. won't it be interesting to see too how you can bring to the Steam boxes in the living room through streaming? It gives you this ability to really, if you're already a Steam user and you're already a PC gamer, which is probably everybody who's going to buy a Steam box for the first year is going to be PC gaming enthusiasts.
Yeah.
You've already got a machine, and this isn't even a great machine, right?
No.
I built this machine a couple of years ago. And it's still fully capable of doing this. So I go get a Steam box. I extend that Steam box just incredibly by being able to stream games to it. And by the way, Linux games too. You can stream from Linux to Linux. It doesn't have to be from Windows to Linux.
So you can still be pure and enjoy that experience. And again, it can come down to just form factor in different locations.
Boom.
There it is.
History for browsers.
Browsers suck.
If you want a Jupiter Broadcasting sticker, go to yesterday's faux show.
Yes.
And there is a link in there to fill out a form to get the sticker.
Yep.
Boom.
There it is.
Boom. And you get a free sticker. So the faux sticker request thread. Now, this is a little form. Now, remember, we want a picture of your sticker.
Yeesh.
So go over here, fill it out. Tell us your IRC nickname and your full mailing address. You can also put your email address in there if you want, but we need your full mailing address because we're mailing this to you.
Yeah.
Choose if you want a black or white logo. And then there's the email address you need to send the picture of it to.
You might be like, hey, Chris, today's your birthday. How did you start your morning?
Well, let me tell you.
How did you start your morning, Chris?
Ninja Parenting. Ninja Parenting. So,
wow. Okay.
Dylan was a little sick last night.
Oh,
he threw up.
Oh, jeez.
So he's on the watch list this morning. You got to make sure everything's still doing okay.
And right.
So sit him down. He's eating his bowl of Cheerios, and I got him a glass of milk. And I start noticing some heavy breathing. Now, I'm over making my coffee, and so I don't know who. My back's to the kid, so I don't know which kid is doing the heavy breathing.
Yeah,
right. But it sets off the parent radar.
Oh,
right?
Totally.
So,
yeah.
Turn around, I pretty quickly assess that Dylan doesn't look quite right, and he's the one heavy breathing. I'm like, oh, man, here comes the sick again, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I say, hey, Dylan, across the kitchen. Hey, Dylan, are you okay? Do you feel sick? What's the matter? No, I'm fine, he says. That was a lie, Matt. He was not fine.
Well, he's trying to be tough.
He's trying to be tough, exactly.
And I respect that.
So I recognize the warning signs, though, and this is all in one proud, fluid movement.
Right.
I start walking towards the child, and as I'm walking, I... peripheral vision, look down, see a big Tupperware bowl, grab it, put it behind my back because I don't want to imply he's about to throw up. Because sometimes when you imply you're about to throw up, then he throws up. So I walk up, are you feeling okay, Dylan? He starts barfing, right?
I feel fine.
Yeah, right. Then right, just slide maneuver, boom, bowl underneath the chin, catches the puke, not all of the puke, but catches most of the puke in the bowl. I'm like, that's why I had the bowl. Whoa.
Crack.
Oh, jeez. Oh, what's that? What are you doing?
Oh, this is gameplay still.
Yeah, what are you doing? Oh, yeah,
I can't believe how good this is. My brain refuses to believe this
is
gameplay.
You think it's pre-rendered. It's not pre-rendered.
My brain refuses to buy this. It's like, there's no way this is gameplay.
What? I just helped you, fool. I just helped you.
Oh, takedown. He doesn't. You know, go ahead and break his shoulder. There you go.
I'm Batman.